Chapter 6. Joel was halfway up the hill before another car crested the rise at the top and started toward him. It was a big, old boat of a car, blue with silver fenders, a red and orange flame painted on the hood. Joel planted himself in the middle of the lane, waving his arms. The blue car swerved toward the opposite side of the road, and he lunged to stay in its path, determined not to let it get away. The car came to a screeching, vibrating halt inches from his extended arms. "What in the hell do you think you're doing?" the driver yelled. He was a teenage boy, probably 18 or 19, with a lot of dark hair and bare, muscular arms. "Please!" Joel gasped, but then he couldn't say any more. He stood doubled over the car's hood, trying to catch his breath, trying to get the words past his throat. "Please!" he repeated. "The kid looks sick," a blonde girl said. She was sitting next to the boy, so close that she could have been sharing the driving. She leaned forward as she spoke, peering through the windshield at Joel. "In the river!" he managed to say, pointing. "Please come!" "What's in the river?" the boy asked, attentive now. "What are you talking about?" Joel shook his head, unable to speak again. His face felt numb. "You mean somebody's drowning or something?" The boy leaned forward, gripping the wheel. Joel nodded dumbly. "Get in!" the driver ordered, reaching back and swinging the door open for Joel. Joel stumbled around the car and slid into the back seat, pulling the door shut again. The blonde girl turned and stared, her mouth working methodically around a wad of purple gum. She looked scared. The car started up with a screeching of tires, barreled down the road, and skidded to a stop on the gravel shoulder just before the bridge. "Who'd you say it is?" the boy demanded, already out of the car and jerking open Joel's door. "A friend of yours?" "Yeah," Joel said, finding a bit of voice as he climbed out of the car. "His name's Tony." "Where'd he go in?" "I'll show you," Joel said, and he headed for the riverbank at a stumbling run. The bigger boy ran beside him, the girl next to the boy, her hands fluttering in front of her like large moths. The sight of the river, the faint, dead fish smell of it, made Joel's knees buckle when he got to the bank again. The boy grabbed his arm and held him up. "Here," he asked, setting Joel back on his feet. "There is a place where it gets deep, right out there." Joel pointed in the direction of the spot where he thought Tony had gone down. The boy pulled off his shirt. "How'd he get in there anyway?" he asked. "We were swimming out to the sandbar, and when I looked back, he wasn't there. I tried to find him. I really did." Joel choked as he spoke, his chest heaving in something like a sob, but he wasn't crying. His eyes were perfectly dry, and though he was shaking, his insides were frozen into a dead calm. The boy had kicked off his shoes and his jeans. He stepped into the river, then paused, squinting at the muddy water. "This his clothes?" the girl asked, approaching with Tony's blue shirt cradled in her arms, as if she thought she had rescued Tony. "Yeah," Joel answered, resisting an impulse to tell her to keep her hands off Tony's things. The boy plunged into the water, skimming beneath the surface, humping up and diving more deeply still. "You be careful," the girl called toward the place where her boyfriend had disappeared. Joel and the girl stood side by side, waiting. Joel wondered for a moment if he should be back in the water looking too, but the memory of the current pulling at him, holding him down, turned his legs to lead. He couldn't move toward the river again. The boy was going to find Tony anyway. Joel was certain of it. The first time the boy surfaced, Joel called out excitedly, "Tony!" But the teenager's hands were empty, and Joel stifled a second, more forlorn cry. "The current probably took him that way," Joel called, pointing toward the bridge. and the boy nodded and ducked under again, swimming farther out this time and emerging downriver 10 or 15 feet. He stayed with it, turning in every direction, diving again and again until his chest heaved and he staggered when he stood. His girlfriend paced on the bank, cracking her gum steadily. "Be careful, be careful," she said occasionally, more to the surrounding air than to her friend. "You won't find anything there," she called desperately when he swam almost to the middle of the river once. "He wouldn't have gone that far out." "But what if he did?" Joel demanded, and the girl didn't answer. She looked as though she were about to cry. Joel stood on the bank and called helpful directions, but finally, despite Joel's encouraging suggestions to try just a bit farther down, the boy began wading toward shore. His head was lowered so the water sheeting off his hair wouldn't drip into his eyes. "You aren't quitting, are you?" Joel asked, the knowledge that he had quit already lying heavily in his gut. "Yeah," the boy gasped, picking up his shirt and wiping his face with it. "I'm quitting." "But you can't," Joel wailed. You just can't." The boy shrugged. He spoke between deep, quavering breaths. "Look, do you know how long it takes somebody to drown?" Joel didn't answer. He hadn't thought about it. Besides, he didn't want to know. "About 5 minutes, I'd say." The boy bent over, resting his hands on his knees. "About 5 lousy minutes. More deep breaths. "Maybe even less." Joel turned away, walked along the bank a few feet, but the boy's voice followed him. The boy was beginning to breathe more normally now, and the words came out in larger clumps. "And how long was it before you even got me down here? 10 minutes? 15? Joel couldn't respond. "And do you know," the boy went on, straightening up slowly, "how hard it is to find anything in a river like this? How fast the current would pull somebody along? Maybe next week a body'll wash up at one of the dams. Or next month." "We're not looking for a body," Joel said, turning back fiercely. "It's Tony we're looking for." The boy used his shirt to shear the water off his chest and arms. He shook his head. "Sorry, kid," he said. Joel went rigid. What was this guy saying? Sorry? What was he sorry about? He didn't even know Tony. "Dumb kids," the boy muttered as he tugged on his jeans. "You shouldn't have been swimming in the river in the first place. You both should have known better. Didn't anybody ever tell you how dangerous rivers are?" He stuffed his feet into his shoes, wrung his wet shirt out. "Well," he said, "you'd better finish getting dressed and come with me." Now it was Joel who was beginning to have trouble breathing. "Where are you going?" he asked. "To the police station." The boy's voice was harsh, angry, as if he blamed Joel for what had happened. "When somebody drowns, you've got to report it to the police." "When somebody drowns?" The words reverberated through Joel's skull like a scream, but he only repeated dully, "The police," and stared at his own feet. What would the police say? They would want to know what Joel and Tony had been doing in the river in the first place. They would want to know what Joel had done to lose his friend that way. Maybe he could call his dad at work first, before he went to the police station. His dad would be good at explaining things. His dad would... What would he do? "You're on your honor, Joel." That's what he had said. "You'll be careful the whole way. You won't go anywhere except the park." And now Joel had proved what his honor was worth. What he was worth. "Come on, kid," the boy said. And though his voice was still rough and it wasn't unkind, he knew. He knew what sort of questions the police would ask. what Joel's father would say. And Joel could tell the boy was feeling sorry for him. No, Joel said, shaking his head vigorously and pulling on his shirt. You go on. I've got my bike here. I'll go report it to the police. No nonsense you getting involved. He's right, the girl said. She held her chin up and spoke with authority. Though there were tears running down her cheeks, there's no sense. Besides, if we go back into town, I might get into trouble. I called in sick to work today, remember? To go with you? She placed an extended index finger in the middle of the boy's chest. But it's gotta be reported, the boy said stubbornly. And the kid's parents have to be told too. At first, Joel thought the boy was talking about his parents, about telling his father and mother. But then he realized the boy meant the Zabrinskis. Joel hadn't thought about Tony's parents up until now. For an instant, he imagined ringing the Zabrinskis' doorbell. And he saw Mrs. Zabrinski, her face tired, her eyes already sad, coming to the door. When the door opened, though, it was Mr. Zabrinski standing there, a heavy leather belt in his hand. Joel could feel the cold sweat breaking out along his sides. If the police didn't get him, Tony's father would for sure. I'll go to the police, he said. I promise.